pull up a chair. I want to tell you about an airplane that everybody said would kill you. An airplane the men who flew her nicknamed a widowmaker before she ever proved them wrong. And I want to tell you about what it takes to bring one back. Not to flying condition, but to something almost harder, to the truth. This is Radio Hangar, I'm Taildragger, and this is the hangar, where we sit with the old iron and let it talk. Today we're talking about restoration, real restoration, the kind measured in years and in patience, and in a specific stubborn refusal to let a piece of history disappear under a coat of fresh paint. Her name is Flackbait now. Before we get into her story, let me take care of the folks who keep the lights on in this hangar. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSold.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story, and that's really what today is about, isn't it? Objects that carry stories. Check them out at AviationSold.com. All right, let's go back. Back to 1941, when the Glenn L. Martin Company rolled out an airplane that looked like nothing else in the sky. The B-26 Marauder, a medium bomber, twin engines, a fuselage shaped like a rifle bullet. Sleek, fast, beautiful, honestly, in a way that most warplanes of that era weren't. And that beauty came with a price. See, Martin's engineers wanted speed, so they gave her a small wing, a short wing with a lot of airplane hanging off it, high wing, loading, we'd call it. What that means in plane talk is that she came down final approach hot, really hot. Where other bombers floated in around 110, the Marauder wanted 130, 140 miles an hour on the numbers. And if you got slow, if you got behind that airplane even a little, she would quit flying and drop a wing, and there was not always enough sky underneath you to fix it. The young pilots coming out of training in 1942 were used to gentle trainers. Then they climbed into this hot rod, and airplanes started going in. They went in so often at the training fields around Tampa, Florida, that the men coined a phrase, "One a day in Tampa Bay." That was the reputation. The Widowmaker. The Baltimore Whore. They called her, too, on account of the little wings, no visible means of support. Pilots joked to keep from thinking about it. Congress actually looked at canceling the whole program. That's how bad it got. Now here's where it gets interesting. The airplane wasn't the problem, the training was. Once the Air Corps brought in men who understood her, men who taught the new pilots to respect that approach speed and never, ever let her get slow, the Marauder stopped being a killer. And she became something else entirely. She became one of the safest bombers of the entire war. By the end, the B-26 had the lowest combat loss rate of any American bomber in the European theater. Lower than the Flying Fortress, lower than the Liberator. The Widowmaker turned out to bring more of her boys home than almost anything else with wings. And no single airframe made that case better than the one we're talking about today. Flackbait. She was a B-26B model, built in Baltimore, and she went to war with the 322nd Bomb Group, 9th Air Force. Her pilot, a young lieutenant named James Farrell, named her after his brother's dog. The dog was called Fleabait. He figured going into the flak, into those black puffs of exploding anti-aircraft fire that filled the sky over occupied Europe, Flackbait was close enough. A little gallows humor painted on the nose. She flew her first mission in August of 1943. Think about what that meant. You're 19, maybe 20 years old. You climb up through the belly hatch into an aluminum tube that smells like hydraulic fluid and cold metal and the sweat of the last crew. You settle into a seat that's basically an armored bathtub. Those two Pratt & Whitney R2800 engines cough and catch and roar 18 cylinders, each 2,000 horsepower aside, and the whole airframe shakes and comes alive around you. And then you fly into a wall of steel. The flak over the marshalling yards and the airfields and the coastal defenses was not something you could dodge. You flew straight and level through it on the bomb run, holding formation, while the sky around you turned black and orange and the airplane bucked from the concussions. You could hear the fragments hit, like gravel thrown against a tin roof, like somebody emptying a bucket of nails onto your wing. Most airplanes did not survive that, not many times anyway. Flackbait survived it more than 200 times. 207 combat missions. More than any other American aircraft in the Second World War. Let me say that again, because I don't think it lands the first time. More combat missions than any other American airplane. Period. She came home shot full of holes over and over. The ground crews counted more than 1,000 separate hits over her career. 1,000. She had her hydraulic shot out. She had an engine shot out and came home on the other one. She had her electrical system fail, her tail torn up, her fuselage perforated so many times the crew chiefs joked you could use her for a colander. She was hit on her very first mission and she was hit on nearly her last, and every single time she brought her crew back. Now the men who flew her were not superstitious about much. But they got superstitious about Flackbait. When you've got 100 missions on an airframe and she keeps coming home, you don't ask too many questions, you just keep flying her. Some crews got moved to newer airplanes and asked to stay with the old girl instead. She had a feel to her. A reputation. In a war where the odds were stacked against you every time you left the ground, she was the one bet that kept paying off. She flew all through the campaign in Western Europe. She hit targets before D-Day, softening up the coast. She flew on D-Day itself, June 6, 1944, part of the enormous armada over Normandy. She flew through the Battle of the Bulge that terrible cold winter. And her final mission came in April of 1945, in the last days of the war in Europe, 207 times out, 207 times home. When the war ended, somebody in the Army Air Forces made a decision that I am grateful for every time I think about it. Instead of scrapping her, instead of melting that history down into pots and pans like they did with so many thousands of warbirds, they set flak bait aside. They recognized what she was. They cut her nose section off and shipped it home to be preserved, and eventually the whole airplane came into the care of what would become the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum. And there she sat, for decades, in pieces, in storage, out at the facility in Silver Hill, Maryland, that old warriors know as the boneyard behind the museum. Her nose was displayed for a while, but the rest of her, the wings, the fuselage, the tail, the engines, sat crated and waiting, waiting for somebody with the time, the money, and the reverence to do the job right. Which brings us to the restoration and to why this one is different from almost every other warbird story you've ever heard. Let me pour us both a fresh cup, because this is the part I really want you to hear. Most restorations, and I love them, I do. Most restorations are about making an airplane fly again, or at least making her look showroom fresh. You strip her down to bare metal. You replace the corroded skin, you rebuild, you re-rivet, you paint her up gleaming and new, and she looks like she rolled off the line yesterday. That's a beautiful thing, and warbird crews who do it deserve every bit of praise we give them. But the team at the Smithsonian looked at flak bait and made a completely different call. They decided not to restore her to look new. They decided to preserve her exactly as she was with every patch. Every repair the ground crews made in the mud of a Ford airfield in 1944, every mismatched panel, every scar. Because here's the thing, that damages the history. Those patches, those hundreds of little aluminum patches riveted over flak holes by exhausted mechanics working by flashlight, those are the fingerprints of the men who kept her flying. If you sand all that away and paint her pretty, you erase the very thing that makes her flak bait and not just another B-26. So the conservators, and that's the right word, conservators, not just restorers, took on one of the most painstaking jobs in the whole museum's history. They took her apart down to the smallest components. And they cleaned and stabilized every single piece, not to erase the age, but to stop it, to halt the corrosion where it sat so it would go no further. Aluminum from the 1940s develops a kind of cancer, intergranular corrosion, that eats it from the inside. The team had to arrest that, piece by piece, without removing the original metal that carried the story. They kept the original paint wherever they possibly could. When flak bait came back from the war, her nose was covered in mission markers, little bomb symbols painted on for each sortie. So many of them, they ran in rows the whole length of the forward fuselage. Names. Nose art. The grime of 2 years of combat. The team worked under magnification to preserve all of it. To clean away only what would cause further harm and leave everything else untouched, think about the patience that takes. You've got a rivet, an original rivet, put in place by a 19-year-old kid at a bomber plant in Baltimore in 1943. Do you drill it out because it's easier? Or do you find a way to work around it? To keep that kid's handiwork in the airplane. The Smithsonian's answer over and over was to keep it, to document it, to honor it. They found things in her, too. That's the magic of taking an old airplane apart. They found original wiring, original equipment, the actual gear these men touched with their hands. They found repairs done in the field with whatever was on hand, the kind of improvisation that never showed up in any manual. Every one of those discoveries is a little letter from the past, and the team read every one. The work took years. This was not a project you rushed, and the goal at the end was not an airplane that could fly. Flak bait will never fly again, and she was never meant to. The goal was an airplane that tells the truth, that stands in the museum as the actual object, the real thing, the same aluminum that flew through the flak over Normandy, so that a kid standing there in the year 2026 and beyond can look up and know. This is real, this happened. Men rode this machine into hell, and this machine brought them back. Now, I'll be honest with you, I'm an old stick. I love the sound of a radial engine at full song. Part of me always wants to see them fly. Part of me grumbles that an airplane belongs in the air and not behind a rope, but I've come around on flak bait, because there's a difference between an airplane that represents history and an airplane that is history. a flying B-26, and there are only a precious few left, gives you the sound and the fury and the feeling. God bless the crews who keep those in the air. But Flakbait, sitting there with her thousand scars preserved, gives you the actual truth, untouched, unfaked. The real steel that the real men bled next to. Both matter, but we only get so many of the second kind. Once you sand the history off, it's gone forever. You can always paint an airplane again. You can never unerase what the war wrote on her skin. And that's the lesson I keep coming back to, sitting here in the hangar thinking about her. When we talk about restoration, we usually mean making the old new again. But the finest restoration work sometimes means having the wisdom to leave things alone, to know the difference between damage that needs fixing and damage that is the whole point. To understand that a flak patch riveted on in the dark by a scared and exhausted mechanic is not a flaw to be corrected. It's a signature. It's a sacred thing.
Flakbait carried her crews through the worst the 20th century could throw at an airplane, and she never once let them down. The least we can do all these years later is make sure she never gets forgotten, not restored into anonymity, not scrubbed into just another pretty museum piece, preserved as exactly what she was. The airplane they said would kill you, that saved everyone who trusted her. My thanks today to the National Air and Space Museum and the conservation team, who've spent years bringing Flakbait back the right way, and to the historians of the 9th Air Force who kept the record of what that airplane and her crews actually did. If you want to read more about the work, or about anything we cover on this show, you can find us at RadioHangar.com. Next time you're near Washington, go stand in front of her, look at the patches, count the mission markers if you've got the afternoon, and think about a 19-year-old named after somebody's dog flying straight and level into the black. She's still here, that's the whole point. This is Taildragger, and you've been in the hangar. Keep the blue side up.